As far as an overview of kind of what we're going to talk about today, we are going to start with sales and use tax issues, and a good portion of our presentation today will focus on that, looking really at Wayfair. I know there's some Wayfair fatigue out there, but this was certainly a monumental shift in Nexus in the SALT world that happened last year, and so we're going to spend some time on that, also how that might impact income and franchise tax. We've got a few topics that are kind of more just issue spotting, things that we think are interesting out there in the SALT world, and then if we have some time, maybe some trends and forecasts of where we might go from here. But we are going to start off with Nexus, and Christy, why don't you kind of give us a little history on something that happened relating to our relationship and in our previous paper we did a few years ago.
Yeah, and it was back in 2010, almost a decade ago, that Nancy and I wrote a paper and presented it at the 28th Annual Advanced Tax Law course, and it was called the Nexus Hokey Pokey, Are You In, Are You Out? Do You Shake It All About? Mm-hmm. And really, that's kind of still what businesses are looking at these days, but they're looking at it in a different context in a different world. We still have the 1977 case of Complete Auto Transit versus Brady, which requires, in order for a tax to be constitutional, that it meets the requirement of having a substantial nexus with the taxing authority that is seeking to impose the tax collection or reporting responsibility on the taxpayer itself. And so the transaction has to have nexus, and the taxpayer has to have nexus. But long-time requirement of QUIL that taxpayers be physically present has been removed as the sole provision by which taxpayers are evaluated, and it has been expanded under Wayfair to include economic presence. Economic presence was somewhat dismissed in QUIL because it was the seventh largest provider of office supplies within the state of North Dakota, but since all of its presence was outside that state, basically it was something that it was able to protect itself by not having any people or property there. The Amazon laws that have come out really look at agents within a state, and so that was kind of a trend toward looking at physical presence in a different way. However, when we got to the Wayfair case, we were starting to look at trends of just simply economic presence. As a practical matter, the businesses are evaluating where they are required to report and collect tax, where they're required to be subject to tax. And it is not only a state-by-state determination, but also an international determination for a lot of businesses that may not even be based in Texas, but might have employees or agents or other folks throughout the world, or even just be selling enough to meet the economic nexus standards. So it didn't go away, physical presence. It's still relevant. The states didn't let go of that. What they've done is they've added to it. And so we're going to talk about some of the responses that the states have had and some of the challenges that taxpayers are facing.
So Wayfair. Again, going to some of the other SALT conferences and presentations, people are feeling a little Wayfair fatigue, but we just didn't feel like we could sit here today and not talk about Wayfair, given what an impact it's had across the country. Quick case summary, if you've not had a chance to read the case, it's pretty short. I'm not going to go into all the details, but essentially, I guess the way I would describe it is after, you know, many years of the states feeling frustrated that Congress was not taking action, business models were changing, we weren't able to keep up, South Dakota, amongst a few other states, decided to kind of take direct aim at QUIL and purposefully passed a law that would require sellers to collect and remit sales and use tax in their state if they had $100,000 worth of sales into the state or 200 transactions over a 12-month period. South Dakota, of course, knew that they would get sued. Wayfair was one of three companies that kind of took that bait. And of course, up the ranks, the case would go. South Dakota knew they would continue to lose, but the big question everybody had was, would the United States Supreme Court take it? And of course, when it did, everybody was all excited in a Twitter to know what might come out of that. And in the end, there was a 5-4 split. All the justices did agree that Quill was problematic and really not a good standard anymore, but decided 4 justices thought it was Congress who should make any determination about how to fix that, but 5 said we're going to do something about it. And so the state that we are living in now, as Christy's already kind of alluded to, is that, you know, yes, you have to remember physical presence is still very much the law of the land, and the states are still looking to that. As a practice pointer, we have indicated if you're helping somebody with a nexus analysis these days, start with a physical presence analysis, go through that analysis as if you would normally do so. If you hit that, stop, just start collecting and remitting.
And consider voluntary disclosure.
Yeah, exactly.
I've been helping a lot of multi-state businesses with that.
That's true. But then, you know, if you cannot find any reasonable physical presence to require somebody to collect and remit, then move on to an economic standard. And that physical presence versus economic standard really was under the Commerce Clause, but one of the things that I think that Wayfair did was bring to the fore the Due Process Clause, which had always been also addressed in Quill originally, but you know it's more in the mindsets of people today, and as from a state perspective, a tax administration perspective, you know, we now need to be cognizant of minimum contacts analysis that we never really cared about before. Now, what that means exactly, we'll be yet to see. Another thing I think that we learned from Wayfair was that the U.S. Supreme Court